Welcome back to the Ryer on YouTube channel. It is time once again for Second Helping, the show of choice for fans and followers of the number one league in all of collegiate athletics. And I said what I said. The number one league in all of collegiate athletics, the Southeastern Conference, Brent Beard. We're not going to change the sort of intro because of Urban Meyer's latest claim that the SEC is now sort of a backseat league. We're not going to do any of that. It is still the preeminent league in collegiate athletics. And, Brent, we got a lot to talk about, a lot to catch up on. It's been a little bit. Good to see you. Good to talk to you again.
Yeah, you too, my friend. Yeah, I agree totally. That there's a lot of the this rhetoric about how the SEC's dominance is over. I always get amused about this in the media about how they will – go with 1 year as a sample size to that. Look, if this is going on 5 years from now, I may buy a little bit of it. But after the SEC has done what they have done historically, and we've just had 1 year, but at the same time, you get three teams in the playoff, you got one left. They were 8-6 in bowl games, and about three of those were at least, if not more, were within a touchdown. So I don't think the dominance is going too far.
Yeah, you know, I guess relative to kind of running the show over a period of about 20 years in college football, I guess if you go a couple of years maybe without winning a national championship, you could say that the dominance is over. But, yeah, it's almost as if Texas is overlooked. And even if Texas wins it, goes on to win the national championship, Brent, you know we're going to hear, well, Texas is really still a Big 12.
Yeah. Oh, yeah,
thing.
Sure.
But, you know, if Oregon had won the national championship, we wouldn't have heard anything about, well, they're Pac-12 school. I don't think we would have probably heard all of that. But we do have four teams left in the college football playoff from the SEC perspective, the Texas Longhorns. Friday night, got their hands full, going to take on those red-hot Buckeyes of Ohio State. Last time Ohio State, though, played a postseason game at Jerry World, didn't go so well. People forget the Missouri Tigers.
That's right.
In last year's Cotton Bowl, took care of business against a depleted Ohio State team. So we're not going to be like some other outlets, some other analysts, some other shows that – really point to bowl play now. You know, a year ago, a lot of folks, looked at Florida State and that performance against Georgia in the Orange Bowl and said, well, you know, there was nothing on the line, opt-outs, all those things. It doesn't seem to apply that way, though, for a lot of those folks when it comes to SEC teams when they lose in bowl games. But should be a lot of fun these next couple of nights. I've got what I like to call tomorrow night, Brent, the Beano Cook Bowl, because Beano, the late Beano Cook, he loved him some Notre Dame.
Yes, he did.
And he loved him some Joe Pa. He loved him some Penn State, too. Mm-hmm. So somewhere above, I guess, Beano Cook gleaming at this Notre Dame-Penn State matchup tomorrow night in South Florida.
Well, they were trying to wake up the echoes in the midst of all this. I think that, Trav, I think this is a phone booth game. Right? I think both these teams love to play it close to the vest. Now Notre Dame deserves a lot of credit on a lot of things. The thing that really got my attention with them is they lead the nation in turnovers or takeaways, however you want to put that, which is impressive. And Trav, how about the guy that probably doesn't get enough credit that you and I heard a lot about a few years ago, one Al Golden.
Yeah.
And the defensive coordinator for Notre Dame has done a really good job with this football team in many, many ways.
Yeah.
Particularly after losing one of their frontline players on defense against Indiana, which certainly but even – even after that, they were able to right the ship. It played extremely well, and both these teams are among the best scoring defenses in the nation.
And by the way, our guy Tex Titer chiming in here in the show comments. Howdy, boys. How's it going, Tex? Good to hear from you on a Wednesday night. Yeah, you know, this feels like a black cleats game when you think about Notre Dame and Penn State and stylistically how these teams match up. Kind of like Notre Dame was fine with the style of play that Georgia typically likes to employ. And you anticipated that being the case, especially for Georgia, not only because Carson Beck was out, but because Georgia's wide receivers try to catch the football, I think, with their feet
instead
of their hands.
Right.
Dylan Bell specifically.
And
look, you know, we can talk about Beck being out of that game, and we need to touch on that matchup, obviously, a little bit down in the Sugar Bowl. And by the way, just like everyone else, our thoughts and prayers go out. Condolences to so many of those people affected down in the French Quarter early on New Year's morning. And also to Kirby Smart, the loss of his father, Sonny. Tragic situation in and of itself. Had a fall there in New Orleans. Hip injury. Underwent surgery. Subsequently did not survive that process. So all of those things to Kirby Smart and his family as well. But as far as the football game itself, you know, I think we went into that thing and, well, if Georgia doesn't win, it's because they don't have enough at quarterback. I didn't think quarterback was really the problem for Georgia in that game. Special teams, you know, some uncharacteristic type of mistakes that you've gotten to the point where you don't anticipate those being a thing for a Kirby Smart coach team. And by the way, you know, Notre Dame, as we talked about, stylistically, a good matchup for that game with Georgia. And I think similar to that with Penn State. I think both these teams kind of look at each other in a similar fashion as well. And I give Penn State a lot of grief, and I know a lot of people do because they did nothing to earn a scenario where they got the first two games in the playoff that they got with SMU and Boise. But you know what? If you put that to the side and you just look at Penn State's football team, they're built in a way that can win a national championship and can sustain and kind of get their way through four games in a postseason if they need to.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Look, they've got – there's some real talent on that team. This Tyler Warren is easily one of the better tight ends in the country at 6 foot six.
I call him Big Ten Bowers. Rock.
Like that
guy. Yeah.
It's excellent. Yeah, absolutely. Now I still, Trav, I just can't help it. I'm picking Notre Dame in this game because I just can't believe that a James Franklin coach team is going to be able to win a game like this and get into the championship game. But, you know, we talked about this a few months ago, that with this 12-game playoff, it really set up well for Franklin, didn't it? Because they get in there because of their record and their schedule, and they are they do have a good line of scrimmage. They give out good backs, tight end. Alar, I think, is okay.
He's playing at a high level now.
Yes.
He's kind of like Will Howard that way.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right time, right place that these two guys are playing. I just like the lines of scrimmage for Penn State. I like both those backs. You know, you talk about the tight ends in this game. I think if it comes down to it, I like Penn State just on paper, because I think if it gets to a situation where Penn State has to lean more on its offense, I think there's more to lean on. Now, outside, you know, not a lot in the way of game changers, but between the tight end and the running back positions, I think they have a chance to control the game. Riley Leonard, you know, he's kind of one of these Jake Coker kind of guys. From years ago at Alabama, he can make just enough winning plays to keep Notre Dame moving forward. But you kind of touched on it too. Where I'm hesitant is I've seen too many of these James Franklin teams in this kind of spot throw up all over themselves, pee down their legs, absolutely, so to speak.
Well, and Trev, to me, if Abdul Carter can play.
Yeah.
Now
Big difference maker.
He really is 6'3", 260. I mean, that's incredible when you think about that. Really,
top NFL guy. Yeah.
No question. No question. But, and again, I mean, Franklin says he's going to play. I mean, look, the guy's a baller, and guys who play like Carter, I mean, you'd have to carry him off the field at some point. 11 sacks on the season, and a healthy Carter would go a long way to make your prediction look pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to pick Penn State. I think Penn State, again, legitimately is a top three or four team in the country at the right mm-hmm. time of the year. I didn't feel that way going into the playoff. And yes, again, I know the route has been very favorable for mm-hmm. Penn State, but you know it when you see it, just in terms of the eye test. Penn State, very impressive, but there is that hesitancy. What about Texas? This team, boy, had the win over Arizona State in the Peach Bowl. Had the game won, had the game lost, came back and won it again. It really goes back to what we talked about with Texas all year long. Mm-hmm. And even the defense I include in this, because that's sort of been the unit of this team that has been spared much in the way of criticism. Yeah. And understandably so, they've played at a high level throughout the season on that side of the football. But even for the defense, you know, if you would have been told, look, 24-8 should be safe, right?
Yeah.
In a game like the quarterfinals that Texas had with Arizona State. But as we know, it was not. The offense continues to be kind of random in terms mm-hmm. of getting out quick against Arizona State, then sort of cruising there. And the next thing you know, you're in desperation mode. Give Quinn Ewers a lot of credit, man. 4th and 13, ASU dials up some pressure. And I know that Kenny Dillingham postgame said, well, it wasn't really an all out blitz, but you know, here's the thing. If you're going to drop a couple of linebacker DN types in coverage, why not just bring them?
Yeah,
really. You're dropping them into the flat on 4th and 13. Just go ahead. You might as well have brought those guys with the other 4 or 5 because, you know, Texas wasn't going to hit you in the flat on 4th and 13. They were going to try to protect it and then get over the top, which is what Quinn Ewers was able to do.
And I give Ewers credit after an inconsistent game toward the end of it, Trav. I mean, he made 2 throws for touchdowns that you probably only see in the NFL. Yeah. So I give him credit for that. Quinn Wisner, if they can run the ball, that would help them tremendously. But that is kind of come and gone. But I give them credit. I mean, Wisner's what? Their 4th back, basically.
Yeah, physical.
Yeah. So that now defensively, to your point, when they're good, they're good. I mean, they're 3rd nationally in total defense. This kid, Colin Simmons, at defensive end, has been really great too. And only 2 teams, Arizona State and Clemson, have got over 350 yards against them. But look, Trav, my thing is, you know, we learned years ago the hot team often wins these games. And is there anybody hotter right now than Ohio State?
Yeah, this Ohio State team kind of reminds me of the 2014 Ohio State team where you had the injury at quarterback. You had Zeke Elliott at the running back position. That team knocked off Alabama in the first ever 4-team.
Yes.
Now we're in the first ever 12-team. So maybe there's some symmetry there too. Mm-hmm. And I believe that Ohio State team beat Oregon in Dallas to win the national championship that year. So there's maybe some things aligning for the Buckeyes. Indeed. But look, we've always felt that this Ohio State roster, if not the most talented roster in the country, certainly a top 2 or 3 and the payroll, I think that kind of match that, but elevated quarterback play. There's no doubt about that at the right time of year has a lot to do with it. They've been able to really do a nice job on that offensive line with the injuries that Ohio State had. The question for Texas is, we really haven't seen a complete game
No.
From Texas. No. Against this type of competition, I know you can look at like the Florida game where they just hammered a depleted UF team there in November, but I'm talking about at this level, you know, a truly complete game. Oklahoma, that didn't turn out to be obviously one of those type of opponents that we know now here in retrospect. Do you trust Texas, I guess, at this point, Brent, in this spot?
Right. Well, look, as we've said, and Travis, their last two games, they've had double-digit fourth-quarter leads and saw them basically disappear.
Yeah. They like to make it fun. I don't know how fun it is for Sark. And I think it's going to be critical because, like we saw against Arizona State, when Sark's on script and that offense is on script and Wisner and the different things they can do,
with
those wide receivers and Gunnar Helm, the tight end, I think they're going to have to be really good in those first 20 plays or so of offense. Because if they go through there without anything, then they could find themselves in a spot like Oregon did in the Rose Bowl, maybe not to that extent of 34-0 or whatever it was, but at a position of severe disadvantage, I guess we could say. So we've got the semifinals coming up the next couple of nights. Otherwise, in the Southeastern Conference, Brent, it's really a lot of transfer portal talk, right?
Absolutely.
And when you look at these sort of transfer portal rankings for the transfers, and I'm looking at On3's right now, they're On3 industry transfer portal rankings for these players. I'm looking at it, and the SEC is about to be home to the top five transfers. According to the On3 industry rankings, John Mateer, the quarterback from Washington State, we know the number one overall transfer portal prospect, making his way from Pullman to Norman to play for the Oklahoma Sooners. Eric Singleton Jr., the wide receiver and electric player previously of Georgia Tech, moving on to Auburn. He was number two. You get to the three spot, another big-time playmaker in Zach Branch, moving on from Southern California to Georgia. Kevin Concepcion, another wide receiver from North Carolina State, going to make his way to Texas A&M, and another wide receiver that is moving to College Station, this one from Texas Tech previously, and Micah Hudson. So A&M is actually losing a couple of guys, but then backfilling at the wide receiver position. You know, Brent, for a league that apparently is just falling off a cliff. These transfers from, well, Washington State, I guess, is in the Pac-2 now, right?
Yeah.
The ACC, the Big Ten, the Big 12. Boy, it sure seems like a lot of these guys still want to try to get to the SEC.
Yeah, and I'm looking at a similar list with those LSU Tigers is number one, Trav.
The team rankings.
Patrick Payton, the edge up there coming from Florida State. Sidere Mitchell, 6'6", 350, who's coming in. Jack Pyburn, who's at Florida, is at Baton Rouge. Michael Van Buren at Mississippi State. Has ended up there too. Destin Hill, who was at FSU, a couple of Bear Sharp, Nick Anderson, a couple of guys from Oklahoma now at LSU. But now, Trav, we've seen this before, and for one Brian Kelly, easy to say. These are guys that need to fit in. They need to play well because he needs to win big.
Yeah, he does. And Georgia has gone this route with the wide receivers in the past. This time it's going to be Noah Thomas and Zach Branch that Kirby looks to bring in. Pretty impressive, too, with Georgia's quarterback situation being what it is. You know, typically when you see quarterbacks on the move, to another program, there's a common denominator in the quarterback position. Georgia really doesn't right now had that kind of guy with Carson Beck moving on to the National Football League. But Kirby's taking on a couple of talented guys. Well, I'll tell you, what about some SEC teams that you think came out on the losing end of some of this stuff? I think Kentucky with the two wide receivers, Berrion Brown and Dane Key both moving on.
Oh, yeah.
Those are big blows. Dane Key moving from Kentucky to Nebraska. Mm-hmm. Berrion Brown staying in the league, going from Kentucky to LSU. LSU, as you mentioned, really sort of augmenting itself at the wide receiver position. You got Nick Anderson staying in the league, going from Oklahoma to LSU, a 6'3" or so wide receiver. You're right. LSU looks like they've done some good things, but in terms of kind of keeping their top 30, 35, 40 guys, Brent, who are some of the teams in the league that you think have withstood this particular stretch well? Because I'm never going to make the mistake again of saying, oh boy, this team came out of it well, because yeah. We know it's not over. This is just one stretch. We'll go through spring ball and then it'll open back up. You know, we still got a long way to go the season, and we really have real rosters that we can kind of sink our teeth into.
I have run across some familiar names. You mentioned Kentucky a few minutes ago. Trev, how about Zach Calzada?
Wow.
Who we've talked is now at Kentucky.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that's going to deal and take care of a lot of where they need to go. I am a little bit impressed, and they really need Jeff Lebby really need to do it. I mean, yeah. Mississippi State has got a top 10 class with this. At that point,
Bama's Luke Crumenhook, quarterback transfer from Florida State. I know that Mississippi State was linked with Jackson Arnold, which you would expect given Lebby being at Oklahoma when Arnold went in there. But I like this addition better, big picture wise, mm-hmm. for State at quarterback. You know, if Michael Van Buren moves on, but just speaks to the revolving door situation, not only just in college football across the board, but man, with these quarterbacks, it's really something.
Yeah. You know, this is something that, and this is why you can never take these things too seriously. Trev, Texas is 66 in the 24/7 transfer portal rankings. Now they've only got four commitments, and what we need to remember too is the teams that are in the playoffs are going to have an extra almost a week to deal with roster management, along the way too. So I still think they will be fine. It can help. This thing can help you. It can certainly hurt you too.
You know, these transfer portal team rankings, you got to be careful, because in some instances you see teams in the 60s and it's not a good thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's not good that they're down there, because they really need to work the portal effectively. But then you look at a team like Alabama that in the On3 team rankings right now is 67th.
Yeah.
And I think Alabama's come through this stretch in really good shape, especially really in the last couple of days with Jeremy Bernard, mm-hmm. the wide receiver, announcing he's coming back. Keon Sabb, the veteran safety, he's coming back. Deontay Lawson, the veteran inside linebacker, coming back. Justin Jefferson, another veteran linebacker. Now, they've lost some guys. They've got 24 transfers going out at Alabama.
Yeah.
But again, if we get back to the top 30, 35 guys on your roster,
mm-hmm.
they've come through this in really good shape, I would say. Now, that doesn't factor in guys that had eligibility remaining that opted for the NFL draft. We're just talking about transfers here. So there's some of that you got to take into account too with the NFL.
Oh yeah. And also the guys who have stayed around, I think the guys they got to stay defensively.
Yeah.
This defense with with LT Overton and Tim Keenan. James Justin Smith. Jefferson gets another year.
Yeah.
This is a really good group coming back.
Yeah, they were able to get Bray Hubbard a lot of work this year.
Yes.
At the safety position. So you bring Keon Sabb back with him. Zay Mincy's a promising young player. Offensive line, Elijah Pritchett moves on to Nebraska. Yeah. You know, Justice Haynes at running back moves on to Michigan. But, you know, you were probably going into this offseason at that, at to me, both tackle spots. Kate yeah. Proctor's got yeah. a ways to go. He's still got mm-hmm. a ways to go physically. He needs to have a hell of a run through the yeah. offseason program.
Yes.
Maybe Wilkin Formby continues to take some steps and becomes more of a reliable option. Maybe, you know, you've got another player in mind at one of those tackle spots. But Jaden Roberts going to come back at the one guard mm-hmm. spot. Parker Brailsford. You know, I'm not seeing Alabama in a lot of way too early top 10s. But just in terms of their top 30 to 35 guys, yeah. even with Jalen yeah. Milroe moving on to the mm-hmm. National Football League mm-hmm. and quarterback being a bit of an uncertainty, yeah, you know, I think the table is set for year two to be a better one than year one was under Kalen yeah. DeBoer. And again, that's with guys like Milroe moving on, Malachi mm-hmm. Moore moving on, and some of the attrition, Jahad Campbell moving on. Mm-hmm. In some ways, it better be a better yeah. year too
yeah.
for Kalen DeBoer than yeah. it was in a 9-4 first season.
Yeah, and this Ball State transfer, Arkell Anugwum.
Offensive tackle. Yeah.
Yeah, and which is something they really need. 6'6", 325. Draylen Washington, the Louisiana transfer.
Running back.
Yeah, 5'9". And look, people snicker at some of these smaller schools, but I can tell you this, you know, some of these guys are developed at a decent rate so far, and number two, my Lord, you know they're motivated and they will give some tremendous effort. So people need to think twice when they look at some of these schools getting players from the Sun Belt and places like that.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, look at, you know, Missouri's had some success with that, you know, yes. at the running back position, as we know. So good players come from everywhere. You're always interested too, right? In the guys that transfer within the league.
Yeah.
Remember when that was an absolute no, that yes. just did not happen. We actually had a league right. rule not that long ago.
Yeah.
Boy, now it's just commonplace. You got Kevin mm-hmm. Coleman, the Mississippi State wide receiver, going from State to Mizzou. Noah Thomas that we talked about going from mm-hmm. A&M to Georgia. There is like a pipeline apparently from Fayetteville, Arkansas now to Oxford, Mississippi. Right?
Really?
Chris Paul Jr. we've seen yeah. move on.
Right.
The linebacker from Arkansas to Ole Miss. Now we've got Patrick Cuttis, an interior mm-hmm. offensive lineman. Luke Haas, a really nice tight end going from Arkansas to Ole Miss. Boy, Lane and the Rebels, they're not playing around
no.
with the portal this time around either, are they?
No, they're not. As a matter of fact, I had a chance to talk to a friend who is with the Ole Miss Network, and that now they were very disappointed about where this season went. They were also very determined that they were going to make a statement at the Gator Bowl, and they basically were able to do that. I don't know if you remember this, but Trev Dart threw a dart in that game. Yeah. That he hit his receiver on about the 4-yard line, and it was probably a great vertical pass, maybe 40 yards or so. I tell you, they're going to really miss him. There aren't many NFL players who could throw that ball.
Yeah, Lane is still a little salty about how all this eligibility stuff is working out too, yes. right? Making some comments that essentially he'd love to have Jackson Dart back for like a 6th year or 7th year
yeah,
or an
yeah.
8th year, like we're seeing with some other oh, yeah. guys in college football. these days, but I thought it was a fitting end to a really nice run for Jackson Dart there at Ole Miss, a guy that it's hard not to admire the way he plays the game as much as how well he always plays it. But that was a nice setup for Ole Miss. You had Duke going through some changes there at the quarterback position. And speaking of quarterback, there are some intriguing moves from the transfer portal perspective. We talked about Jackson Arnold going from Oklahoma, not to Mississippi State, but to Auburn. Now, Auburn's bringing in Deuce Knight there, too. Highly regarded freshman. That's going to be a revamped quarterback room, so that'll be interesting to see how it plays out. One of the better names in the transfer portal, Air Nolan, the quarterback going from Ohio State to South Carolina. And this is a situation where what Shane Beamer and his team were able to do throughout the season, bowl loss to Illinois notwithstanding, probably gave South Carolina some juice with a guy like Air Nolan. He sees Lenora Sellers. You know, who knows how long Lenora Sellers will be in Columbia at the quarterback position and thinks, hey, you know, I go there and get ready and work with a former NFL coach in Mike Shula and be ready to go. So some interesting moves at the quarterback position in the league as well, Brent.
And by the way, speaking of South Carolina, Trev, how about one Robbie Ashford committing to Wake Forest? Robbie has kept the U-Haul folks in business over the last few years.
Yes, he has. So continuous movement, and we'll be keeping track of it, obviously, as it sort of comes to a halt here in the not-too-distant future, just for this window again. It's kind of like the weather in Northeast Florida. If you don't like the roster of your team, just wait a month or two. It'll change probably pretty quickly. So, Brent, the SEC moving forward. Again, a lot of talk about maybe not the effectiveness, although the bowl record, as you pointed out earlier, not that it should be the be-all, end-all in the evaluation process. There have been situations in the past that should have educated us on that particular approach. What's the biggest concern for the SEC moving forward? Or is it just, you know, kind of stay the course and kind of let these teams just do what they seem capable of doing?
I think they'll be fine, but there is a concern. And Kirby talked about this all year long. And people would ask him, Coach, what's your biggest issue? And he kept saying, well, we don't have any depth. And frankly, the thing we're seeing now is something we never saw before is, Trev, those quality, what, second teamers, maybe even third teamers who could give you a solid, what, half a dozen to 10 plays or so in a game. You know, they're going somewhere else so they can start.
Yeah.
So I think that's going to be as big of an issue for this league as anything is how do you keep those guys and for the one and if you can't for the ones who stay, what are you going to do to be able to develop the guys you've got?
You can't. And I kind of go back to Alabama for the latest example of this because Alabama's getting back a couple of linebackers and going portal to bring one in.
Right.
Three guys that essentially have 1 year left. I think each of the three have 1 year left. But you still had some young linebackers at Alabama after one season, even though they've got at least two more years of college football, that were like, nope, I know it's Deontay Lawson. I know it's Justin Jefferson. I'm not sitting behind those guys for another year. I'm going somewhere where I can play a lot in year two. And so that's what happens more and more these days. It's not that you're even asking guys after a year in the program to hang around and develop for a couple of years before maybe becoming the guy in their fourth year.
Yeah.
They want to be the guy in their second year.
Sure they do.
And if they're not the guy in their second year, they're moving on. And yeah, that's where your depth goes. And that's why I go back to, really the best you can hope for is keeping that top 35 to 40 yes, together as best yeah, as you possibly can. And then you just, you're going to need some luck.
Yeah.
You're going to need some luck.
Really
it's we've made the NFL comps in the past. It's never been more true than it is right now, especially from a depth perspective, because boy, you have a rash of injuries or even just a handful at the critical spots. And there's a good chance your season is not going to be what you may have hoped back in early August.
Yeah, absolutely. And two or three things I want to hit you with before we go. One, Squirrel White leaving Tennessee.
Yep.
The often injured one and going to Florida State. I'm hopefully he'll be healthy. Trev, I'm not making fun of the kid, but here you got Jason Rashada.
Yeah.
Since June of 22, has committed to Miami, flipped to Florida, decommitted from Florida, committed and signed to Arizona State, transferred to Georgia, and now reenters the portal. Now I hear he's gotten some people advising him that frankly don't know what they're doing, and that would be certainly the case. But my stars, to your point a minute ago, when you can't stay anywhere for any length of time, it's hard to get any playing time if you don't play.
Yeah, I mean, especially at the quarterback position.
No.
The continuity there is critical. Now, look, there's the other side of that too. Continuity at the offensive coordinator spot.
Yeah.
Even right, if you do right, stay. Look at Jalen Milroe. You know, yes, I know Jalen's a lightning rod for some criticism, mm-hmm, and yeah, more than a little of it, yeah, I think is justifiable.
Mm-hmm.
But also look at, you know, what he kind of went through,
yeah,
year to year, yeah, with different staffs, mm-hmm, different offensive coordinators. It can't be good for development.
No,
when you're making moves, either way, whether your coordinators are in and out, your quarterback coach is in and out, or your quarterbacks. Or you're a quarterback and you're constantly on the move as well. But it's kind of where we're at in today's college football, I guess.
Yeah, it really is. And Trav, I can't help myself. I just got to throw this in here. My lead note, the ones we share, one Phil Steele saying on Tuesday, Trav, the magazine goes to print in 150 days.
Brent, can we just get through the semifinals of the college football playoff before you're on magazine watch?
Oh yeah.
I think you like the magazines more than the games. There's part of me that thinks that, Brent.
And you know, again, it's not my fault that Steele brings this up.
You love it. You love it.
Oh, that's good stuff.
You can't wait.
But I tell you, on a serious note, though, and we've talked about this throughout the entire segment. Look, we've got the our first playoff. We're basically in our final four in the semis.
Yeah.
And Trev, this portal, it's still taking up way too much time. I mean the playoffs or the crown jewel right now of college football. So my question throwing it out here for both of us is, what do the powers to be do to get this portal away from this block of time from what, December the 20th when we start, to basically January the 20th? I think that's going to be crucial, Trav, for the for the health of the game.
Yeah, it's power to the players right now.
It is.
I think in some ways the governing body's a little bit gun shy when it comes to trying
to
administer too much control, because it feels like they're a lawsuit away almost every day.
Right.
So yes. I don't I don't have the answers. I mean, it's just kind of what it is right now. And if, boy, if the powers that be in collegiate athletics are expecting Washington, D.C. to get it figured out. That's even more scary. But it's unimaginable. Just even 6-7 years ago, to think of where we're at with collegiate athletics, collegiate sports. But I know this much: those TV ratings are going to look good tomorrow and Friday night.
And listen, I'm going to ask this because I'm thinking it's a lot more important than people realize. Trev, the weather, particularly at in Dallas, is going to be just horrific. Trev, how does the ticket man deal with this inclement winter weather over the next 2 days?
Well, he's got the home state Longhorn, so that makes the ticket man in Dallas kind of weatherproof.
He
can kind of deal with that. Now, if it was Oregon
and
Ohio State, be a tough spot for the Arlington ticket man. But boy, big orange, that burnt orange being in there on Friday night. Dallas. Yeah. Shouldn't be a problem for the ticket man.
And I tell you, we'll get into it more over the next few weeks, but I can tell you this. No one's poking fun at the SEC basketball teams, are they, Trev?
What about the first couple of games to start conference play? I mean, Kentucky gets a big win at home over Florida, feeling good about itself, then goes on the road to Georgia. And kind of gets thumped. No nights off in Southeastern Conference basketball. We saw it with Florida losing on the road at Kentucky, comes back home last night and just drills number one Tennessee. When Tennessee's not good offensively, when Rick Barnes teams aren't good offensively, they are really not good.
They really are.
Really not good in Gainesville last night.
Trev, I talked to a friend of ours this week who's on the national scene and covers both college football and basketball. And he said, the best team I've seen this year is Auburn. And Jani Broome is probably the best player.
Yeah, the big for Auburn. It's hard to argue with that. He's an old dude, too. So it's not just that he's talented. He's got that maturity. And Auburn's great. They look super right now under Bruce Pearl. Mm-hmm. And, we're all going to be looking forward to Alabama-Auburn on the basketball court more than on the football field, which is saying something in and of itself when you think about those sports and those schools.
They play in Tuscaloosa the day after Valentine's Day.
Yep.
And they play at Auburn, Trav, the last SEC game before the SEC tournament. So the students may be camping out before the games 3 or 4 days ahead of time.
Well, the gym, the arena at Auburn, which I think is great in terms of its configuration and its capacity, 8,000-9,000 is all they get in there. I think that's perfect in today's sports in general. You talk about tough tickets. That Coleman and Tuscaloosa seats, 15-16?
Yeah.
So you got a little more room to work with. But boy, down there at Auburn, you got about half that. So tough tickets coming up for Alabama Auburn basketball. Brent, anything else before we get out of here on a Wednesday night?
I think we're just going to be continuing to watch kind of where the portal is going. We've got, I'm excited about certainly the next two nights. I mean, being able to watch these games. The TV ratings are going to be off the charts. What I'm hearing is next year's playoff may pretty well remain the same as this year's. They may tweak it a little bit, but in 2026, the playoff will be expanded. Mm-hmm. And if they take, now we don't know what they're going to do with these home games, but I've also heard as of late that if they take these, I hope they don't, but if they do take these home games away for Trev, these bowl games like here in Jacksonville, Florida, yeah. Are going to reap the benefits of that and very, very possibly have a playoff game.
Yeah, that feels inevitable almost because you're going to have games in cities mm-hmm. that are just outside right now. You know, Orlando, you could certainly yeah. see as sure. a playoff city, especially given the weather and the climate and all those things. And, mm-hmm. you know, the city itself, you got to think they're going to want to be in that mix.
Yes.
And that means yes. what? Big, big dollar signs.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, Brent,
yeah.
as always, a lot of fun, my man. Great catching up. Resetting with Brent Beard here on Second Helping. We appreciate all of our live viewers on this Wednesday night checking in with us as well. If you haven't subscribed to the channel right on YouTube as of yet, we hope you'll hit that subscribe button, hit that notification bell as well. That way you're alerted to all of our content as it drops here on the channel, and a thumbs up is always greatly appreciated. Brent, look forward to doing it again soon.
Brent, me too. And as we leave here, is Pop's behavior been exemplary over the last few days?
He's been really good. I took him to watch some college basketball last weekend. He's almost choir boyish. I mean, I don't know how to describe it. I never thought I'd use those words to describe Pop. He's just very, very docile almost. Yeah. Yeah. We don't cringe as much with Pop these days.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. But he's doing good. As our late friend Greg Larson used to say, he still bears watching, doesn't he, Trav?
Yeah, he's still got that in him. That doesn't mean he doesn't have it in him. But he's 77 now.
Yeah.
You know, so but he gets around well. Here's the thing. Pops is 77 and he still puts the Christmas lights up along the eve of the house.
Oh, no.
And then takes them down.
Yeah. Oh, so, my.
We don't really like Pop.
No.
Pop's up there on that 6-foot ladder, but
absolutely not.
He's earned it. He's earned the right to have a catastrophic situation if that's what he wants.
Oh, me. Well, look, Happy New Year to everybody. We're grateful for our families doing well, and it's going to be an exciting 2025.
We certainly hope each and every one of you out there thrive in 2025. We're going to do our best right here on Ryer on YouTube as well. For Brent Beard, Travis Ryer, thanking you once again for joining us. Until next time, so long, everybody.